Broadcasting live from atop the Rocky Mountains, the crossroads of the West. You are listening to the Liberty Roundtable Radio Talk Show.
All right. Happy to have you along, my fellow Americans. Sam Bushman and Kirk Crosby live on your radio. Hard-hitting news the networks refuse to use. No doubt starts now. This, my fellow Americans, is the broadcast for February the 4th in the year of our Lord, 2019. This is our one of two, and our goal always to protect life, liberty, and property, and to promote God, family, and country on your radio in the traditions of our founding fathers. Hope you're all doing absolutely fantastic. It is a lot of work to restore the Republic, ladies and gentlemen, but it is not beyond the American people. I'll tell you that right now. There is hope for the greatest country on the face of the earth. Welcome to the broadcast. Let's see here. All right. Too many things open at the same time on my computer here. Sorry about that. All right. A recap of Saturday's broadcast. We talked about news the networks refuse to use. Liberty Roundtable Live Week in Review. Incredible amount of news we cover on the radio. Second hour, we had our guest on, Mr. Cliff Kincaid, President of America Survival, USASurvival.org, and we covered a lot of ground. We talked about fighting communism with socialism will not save Venezuela, an incredible article Cliff wrote. We also talked about the USA calls on the world to pick a side on Venezuela. Why do we got to pick a socialist or the other socialist? Why don't we stand for the sacred cause of liberty and stand with the supreme law of the land, huh? We talked about the White House, said walls work. I got an email from the White House that said walls work, and I fired back a tweet to President Trump and said, FYI, that's if you don't talk, you actually build and use them. Walls work if you build them, but they don't work if you don't build them, just so you know, Donald. Democrats are advancing infanticide bills. Yeah, it's tragic, man. They want to literally murder babies after they're born. And these people are unhinged, absolutely satanic. When it is just, wow. All right, anyway, that's a recap of the broadcast that took place on Saturday. It is still available on demand at libertyroundtable.com. If you want to check it out, please do. I'm telling you, incredible hour with Cliff Kincaid. All right, without further ado, news the networks refuse to use today starts now. Kirk Crosby still on the road. Welcome back, sir.
Buenos dias. Greetings and salutations. Howdy, howdy, howdy. Thank you, Sam.
You're very welcome. Is Lowell with us yet? All right, I think we'll have to wait just a minute and get Lowell, but the mainstream press just baffles me. I didn't get time to cue up this soundbite well enough, Kurt, but I wanted to try to play it anyway. And I got a question here. Let's see if I can.
Bob also said during an interview broadcast yesterday that he and NFL Commissioner Roger Goodell have set aside their differences over players kneeling during the national anthem. More on these stories.
What does that mean? What is this all story all about? All right, let's just try and do this. I didn't have time to trim this all up, but I just heard it on the news right at the end of the hour. Listen.
Here, the numbers underscore intense competition among the automakers.
Correspondent Jeremy House reporting. President Trump.
All right, so here's the story. I finally got it trimmed up, ready to go. Sorry I didn't have it perfectly. I usually get it all queued up and ready, but I wanted to get this. The problem is it was the last story in the news, and I just didn't have time to get it all edited. It takes at least 30 seconds to edit something sometimes. Anyway, so check this out. Here's the story.
President Trump says a lot of people from the NFL have been calling and thanking him for signing legislation addressing concerns with the criminal justice system. Mr. Trump also said,
hey, Kurt, a lot of people have been calling the Donald. Can you tell me how to get that done, sir? A lot of people got that figured out, and I, as a nationally syndicated talk show host in the media for 25 years, I've been around for a long time. People got this done. I don't know how to call Donald. Can you help me call Donald, please? I've got something I want to talk to Donald. I'll thank him about the NFL on my way. And I'll go ahead and, you know.
1-800-DONALD, I think is what.
Is that what I call? 1-800-THE-DONALD. I don't mean to be rude, but is this genuine, Kurt, a statement like that goes out through the mainstream press? Hey, a lot of people have been calling me, thanking me for this and that and whatever, and really? Is that true, Kurt?
Well, I suppose you could call maybe like two people that have your number a lot, you know? I mean, maybe three, whatever. I mean,
I know, but even if that's true, you got this special class of people that are calling him. But the way the mainstream press is talking about it or the way that Donald is talking about it, it makes it sound like, you know, the average Joe's getting a hold of their president and just like, hey, Donald, thanks, buddy, for, you know, this and that. And I don't believe the story's genuine at all. And I don't know if it's Donald or the media, but either way, it ain't happening, Kurt. If my life depended on it, buddy, I can't get a hold of President Trump for any reason. Right?
Well, I know there's a way, Sam.
Okay.
It involves a bunch of zeros and, you know, that kind of thing. But
You're saying if I roll out a big, you know, six-figure check to the Donald's campaign or whatever, then I might be able to get a hold of Donald.
Well, that's a pretty sure way.
The only problem is it's not a possible way because I don't have that kind of money.
Yeah, I know.
All right, did Lowell join us yet?
I did.
Welcome to the broadcast, my friend. I want to play you a little clip from the mainstream press, and then I want to get I want you to help me with something. Maybe I'm just ignorant. I've only been in the media for like 25-plus years, and so I'm just a little bit clueless, but I'm hoping. Here's the mainstream press, okay?
President Trump says a lot of people from the NFL have been calling and thanking him for signing legislation addressing concerns with the criminal justice system. Mr. Trump also said during an interview broadcast yesterday that he and NFL Commissioner Roger Goodell have set aside their differences over players kneeling during the national anthem.
All right, so I got to understand. A lot of people have been calling the Donald to thank him. And can you tell me how to get that done, sir?
Well, there's the telephone number, 202-456-1111. That's how you call the president.
Yeah, but that doesn't get a hold of Donald at all.
Oh, no, I know. He's just got people talking to him. I mean, taking his calls for him, but basically that's how you get your comments, onto his radar. I doubt that he even gets on his radar, but basically you have people there tallying, you know, well, this person called about this issue.
Yeah, I know, but that's not, when he says people have been calling me and thanking me, that's not.
Yeah, I don't know how to do that.
Okay, nobody that I know knows how to do that, sir.
Yeah.
Now, one key thing, and Kurt kind of hit on it in a roundabout way. He said, Sam, if you write a big old check to the Donald, then you can probably get a hold of him. Listen to the story very carefully because they word this. They want you to believe this is how the mainstream press loves Donald and they protect him and help him. They make you believe that Donald's the average guy and everybody and their dog just could get a hold of the Donald, but you can't. But they want you to feel like you can or feel like people do. But listen to the wording.
President Trump says a lot of people from the NFL have been.
A lot of people from the NFL. You got that, Lol?
Yep.
That doesn't mean you, buddy. You ain't from the NFL, sir.
Well, you know what it might also be is that he's probably got, friends in high places or friends in low places, as the case may be, you know, prior to his presidency that played in the NFL. Just like, you know, I've got friends in the NFL. Kyle Van Noy, he played in the Super Bowl yesterday. I don't know Tom Brady. But I do know, I could claim to know Kyle Van Noy, who used to play Brigham Young University. So maybe people like that are calling him. Maybe they have his personal number. I don't know.
Maybe. I bet you $50 Kyle doesn't know how to get a hold of Donald either, though.
Wait, so, Lord, you've got Kyle Van Noy's number?
No, I don't. I'm just saying that I could make the claim that I know him because I watched him play here at Brigham Young University, and I cheered him on and stuff like that.
Yeah, they say everybody's related if you get 6 degrees away. So, you know, I pretty much know the Donald to him, and I went to his Republican convention, and I went to his inauguration and stuff like that. And, you know, I mean, I know this guy. See, that's what they want you to believe, but I just kind of believe it's disingenuous.
Yeah,
anyway.
I think it probably is too disingenuous. How about Jason Chaffetz? He used to play football for the...
Yeah, but I can't even get a hold of Jason, buddy. I even went to an event to talk to Jason one time, buddy, but he got up there and was surrounded by a bunch of people and surrounded by security and all this stuff, and then he got up and spoke really quick, and then I beelined it over there to talk to him as fast as I could after his talk, and he was already gone.
Ew.
So
that's rough. I don't know.
All I'm telling you is that, you know, it just... This is kind of the reason that we have a problem. You've got this elitist mentality, and they're just different from the rest of us. Anyway, I digress. That's not really the topic for today's broadcast. But when I heard that at the end of the news, I went, wait a minute. Maybe everybody knows how to get a hold of Donald, but Sam. Maybe that's the problem. So I just thought I'd see if you guys knew, you know.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Speaking of the Super Bowl, I guess, what was it, a 13-3 win, the lowest scoring Super Bowl ever? Is that how it is?
Yeah, something like that. Yeah, I think that was exactly a 13-3, yeah.
Tom Brady on his sixth win, more, what, titles than anybody else ever? Is that how it is?
Yes, he's I guess now this is the most storied player in history to win that many Super Bowls. Pretty amazing, actually.
All right. They played that dude on the Sabbath. I didn't watch it. Did you watch it, Lowell?
Parts of it, yes.
I heard it was a super boring game, though, with that kind of low scoring. Wasn't it boring as all get out? By the first half, it was only 3 points. The Patriots had, what, got a field goal by the first half, and that's it?
Yeah, if you like offense, it was a boring game. If you like defense, it was an exciting game. So, I think for the most part, most people thought it was probably boring.
I'm a pretty weird guy. I like a combination of offense and defense, personally. But, you know, maybe I'm just confused about sports. What do you think, Kurt? I kind of like a combination of offense and defense. When we don't have the ball, then I like really good defense. And then when we have the ball, I'm thinking offense is kind of the name of the game, personally. So, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm thinking Super Bowl-esque. I mean, the biggest game of the year, I'm thinking I'd like to see a little bit of offense and defense, you know? But Kurt's right, though. Tom Brady understands this, you know, keys to the game. Score more points than the other guy. Isn't that your keys to the game, Kurt?
That's exactly right.
All right, quick pause. Kurt Crosby with us. Lowell Nelson with us. I want to talk about a different kind of Super Bowl, if you will. We'll do it in seconds on your radio.
Liberty is not free. Its costs are innumerable. Without monetary funding, the valiant efforts of freedom-loving Americans become diminished or outright defeated. We present a solution, the Give Me Liberty Fund. The plan is quite simple. Invite individual Americans to contribute less than a dollar a day. These monetary funds are used to promote liberty-minded media, organizations, events, candidates, movements, and speakers. In the spirit of transparency, all expenditures are published. Patriotic business owners provide discounted products and services to Give Me Liberty Fund members. Our greatest strength is in numbers. Go to GiveMeLibertyFund.com and become part of the solution today. GiveMeLibertyFund.com. Participate in the peaceful restoration of the greatest and freest country in the world.
Kosher. Certified. Put the two words together to get Kosher-tified, which is spelled with an S-E-H instead of just S-H. It's the right way to spell this, the German way, and it made it easier to trademark. Now, did I tell you that the letters S-C-H still make the shh sound, as in all those American food producers saying, shh, let's keep it really quiet that our product is kosher certified. Think about it. Nearly one century of kosher certification, and hardly anyone outside exclusive observers knows that most packaged food and kitchen products are literally certified by religious intermediaries. Well, because you, consumer, are indirectly paying for this, the Kosher-tified app is here to make kosher certification awareness an inclusive matter for people of all faiths and identities, and it even boasts a unique database of products not kosher certified. We call that NKC. Start memeing it. It's fun. NKC, not kosher certified. Now, to confuse our audience even more, we put a question mark at the end of our name, and that really cinched our trademark approval. It relates to the website where you can begin your new shopping behavior, thekosherquestion.com.
All right, John Stossel wrote an incredible article. Lowell Nelson, CampaignForLiberty.org, has the details, Lowell.
Well, it's called the Super Bowl of Corporate Welfare, Sam.
Whoa.
Yeah.
Are we winning or are we losing? I think we're getting spanked, buddy.
Yeah, taxpayers are getting junk in this one. The Super Bowl was played yesterday, so I thought it appropriate today would be a good time, really, to talk about these monstrous bowls that are dotting our country, these big stadiums, right? These big palatial stadiums in which these football games and soccer games and so forth are played, and how most of them are subsidized by taxpayers, Sam, believe it or not. The Super Bowl yesterday was played in Atlanta, a brand new bowl, apparently. simply the best facility in the world, they call it. Well, shouldn't, you know, I mean, and the mayor down there in Atlanta is so very proud of this facility, but I ask the question, shouldn't he be equally proud of all the market players? I mean, shouldn't he be just as proud as the small business owner as he is for the big billionaire that owns that bowl? Well,
kind of like the small guy can't get hold of the Donald, but the rich and famous certainly can, huh?
That's right, man. Money paves the way, opens doors. Stossel writes that taxpayers were forced to donate more than $700 million, Sam, to the owner of Atlanta's football team, billionaire Arthur Blank, and to get him to build the stadium. In addition to the subsidies, of course, the Falcons get all the money from parking, restaurants, merchandise sales, and so forth. So you talk about a sweet deal. Yeah, sweet deal for the Falcons, really. But a real raw deal for the taxpayers who are forced, at the point of a gun, mind you, to fork over their hard-earned cash to the government so the government could charitably give that cash to the billionaire who built the stadium. Well, this scam is not unusual, Sam. It goes on everywhere across the country. Even Rio Tinto Stadium, a third of that Rio Tinto soccer stadium here in Sandy, Utah, which cost $110 million to build, roughly a third of that cost was subsidized by taxpayers here in Utah. So, taxpayers, most of whom never attend a game, they subsidize the billionaire. Sam, what do you think about that?
Well, I think it's typical, whether we talk about a small swimming pool in your local area or a rec center or a wedding, you know, building for weddings or whatever you want to say, on up to these big, massive stadiums and stuff like that. I have a problem with all of it because it is. It's corporate welfare. It literally is welfare for the rich. You know, on one hand, I pay a certain amount for my ticket, which is already through the stratosphere. But then I got to pay for these you know, things with my tax dollars. It's not even possible to determine how much I'm really paying, number one. And number two, the old lady or the just married couple that doesn't really have the money for this is forced to be on the hook as well for it. And it's a sham, and it pulls the lever of government in the favor of the few at the expense of the many, sir.
Well, you got that right, Sam. And you point out one thing that that I've underscored here in my notes, and that is that we're doing this at the expense of those who are not participants in the spoils, so to speak. I mean, if you build a community swimming pool and you tax everybody in the town to help pay for this community swimming pool, and then think about how many people actually use the pool. There might be a 1% or 2% of the community that actually goes and uses the pool. Then you've actually taken money away from most of the people. You've socialized the cost, and you've privatized the good. You've actually given a benefit to just a few people in the community. And not only that, but you've hurt the businesses who would have purchased and developed their own swimming pool. You know, had they seen a market incentive there to do so. And because government has stepped in and built the swimming pool, that hurts a businessman who would have done so or who had already done so. You might have a private swimming pool available, and then the government comes in and builds one, and it's simply not fair.
Well, and not only does it hurt the business, but it hurts the family, because let's say that there's not a swimming pool in a given area. And the business owner says, look, I can't make it financially work. I don't think, you know, if we build it, they will come is the idea. But I don't think they'll come. And I don't want to take that risk. It's too, you know, there's been three swimming pools here before that have all went dark. And I don't want to do one. Then what you do is you rob the family. You say, Sam, your vacation, or Sam, you're putting your kids in a private school, or Sam, your funding of your upgrade to your home, or your paying off of your home, or your ability to buy food is going to all be secondary to this forced government expenditure, is what you're really saying to the family, right?
Yeah. Yeah, in fact, the politicians that give your money away to these corporations like this, they think they're being charitable, Sam. Well, I'm here to tell you that's not charity at all, Sam. It is theft. For them to take money out of the mouths of your children, so just to fund a stadium in your community. See, that is theft. That's stealing from you money that you could have used to feed your children or to send them to a private school or to purchase clothing or to get dance lessons or singing lessons, something that would expand and help your children blossom as they grow up, right? I mean, that's taking money away from the one who needs it the most, knows how best to use that money, and gives it to somebody the politicians have chosen now. They're choosing winners. They're choosing winners and losers in this process. They're the ones, they want to boast. See, they want to brag that they have helped to bring this stadium to town. And just look at all of the jobs that it came to town with it, and think of all of the wonderful things that are, you know, the growth in the economy that result from these big soccer matches and the football games and so forth that go on, you know, maybe 10 or 15 times a year in these monstrous structures like the stadiums.
In fact, John Stossel writes, taxpayers were forced to donate more than $700 million to the owner of Atlanta's football team. He's a billionaire. His name is Arthur Blank. I'm glad his last name is Blank, because then I could just say Arthur Blankety Blank and I'll be right. But anyway, this guy, the goal was to get him to build the stadium. In addition to the subsidies to build the stadium in the first place, believe it or not, the Falcons get all the money from parking, restaurants, merchandise sales. I mean, it doesn't end. It's an absolute fiasco. Anybody in their right mind would never approve such a thing.
Well, and the various cities compete with each other, so I don't have the details here. John didn't put them in his article, but undoubtedly there are neighboring communities across the nation probably wanting the Falcons to purchase their, to build a stadium in their city, right? And so maybe not in Atlanta, but I don't know, what's another city in Georgia? Atlanta is about the only big city I can think of in Georgia, but say there's another city called the city of Nelson in Nelson, Georgia. Well, Nelson would be out there too. He would be trying to curry favor. He would be giving tax incentives, and he would be raising money to see if he could get Arthur Blank to build the stadium in his town, because it would be such an economic boon to the residents of his community. And so you've got all of these cities who are putting themselves out and offering various sums, millions and millions of dollars. And so, I don't know, it's an evil practice because it hurts people. But I don't know, the winner claims that it helps the people of their community. I don't think it does, Sam. But
amen. And the mayor of Vegas in on the same scam.
Well, that's for sure. You know, Stossel talks about Carolyn Goodman, Las Vegas mayor. They recently funneled $750 million of taxpayer money to the owners of the Oakland Raiders to get them to move the team to Vegas. And I believe this is going to happen, not this year, but maybe this year, maybe next. I don't know, this year or next, the Oakland Raiders are going to come to Las Vegas. And that's and so one of the enticements to get them to come do that, of course, is all this money that Las Vegas citizens are putting up. And they don't have a choice in it, Sam. They just get the money taken from them, stolen from them, and then given by the politicians to the Oakland Raiders. They don't have a choice in it. And anyway, it's a sad deal. And there's just one other problem here, Sam. And we can hit this harder when you get back from the break, but there's a French economist who talked about the problem of the seen and the unseen. And we can explicate that as soon as we get back from this break.
We'll do it in seconds. Sam Curtin Lowell, Liberty Roundtable Live.
Protecting your liberties. You're listening to Liberty News Radio.
You USA Radio News with Chris Barnes.
President Trump is suggesting he may be making some major announcements in tomorrow evening's State of the Union address, including about whether he'll declare a national emergency at the U.S.-Mexico border and about the expected upcoming meeting with North Korean leader Kim Jong-un.
I won't tell you yet, but you'll be finding out probably State of the Union or shortly before.
President Trump also saying in that CBS News interview he wants to keep a U.S. military presence in Iraq to watch Iran.
We spent a fortune on building this incredible base. We might as well keep it. And one of the reasons I want to keep it is because I want to be looking a little bit at Iran, because Iran is a real problem.
This morning, Iraq's president says it's all news to him and says in a statement that his country wants to have good relations with Iran and doesn't support the Trump plan to keep U.S. troops in Iraq. And this is USA Radio News.
Cars that sound like this. Trust Pennzoil Synthetics to protect their engines in extreme conditions. Top racing teams know that Pennzoil Synthetics give them the performance to help them succeed. And your car's engine deserves the same. Because your daily commute is no less important. Get complete protection for top engine performance just like the pros. Visit Pennzoil.com/rebate to save on Pennzoil Synthetics. Terms apply.
I'm Jay Farner, CEO of Quicken Loans, America's premier home purchase lender. We've created a new way to protect you from unpredictable interest rates. Our exclusive Rate Shield approval. First, we lock your interest rate for up to 90 days. Then, if rates go up, your rate stays locked. But if rates go down, your rate drops. Either way, you win. Call us today at 800-QUICKEN or go to rocketmortgage.com.
Rate Shield approval only valid on certain 30-year fixed-rate loans. Call for cost information and conditions. Equal housing lender. License in all 50 states. NMLS number 3030. Additional conditions or exclusions may apply.
The New England Patriots Super Bowl champs again. The defense coming up big as they edge the L.A. Rams 13-3 at Super Bowl 53, the lowest scoring Super Bowl ever. Meanwhile, don't expect to see President Trump's young son on the football field anytime soon. Here's USA Radio's Rick Vincent to explain why.
President Trump tells CBS's Face the Nation he would be concerned if his son Barron wanted to play football in school.
I think the NFL is a great product, but I really think that as far as my son, well, I've heard NFL players saying they wouldn't let their sons play football, so it's not totally unique, but I would have a hard time with it.
Trump says his 12-year-old son is more interested in soccer anyway. Back in 2016, Trump had been critical of rule changes for safety, calling them soft, but now he calls it a dangerous sport with the potential for serious head injuries.
The jury in Joaquin El Chapo's federal drug conspiracy trial in New York City expected to get the case today, and this is USA Radio News.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, we're talking about an incredible column written by John Stossel, The Super Bowl of Corporate Welfare. And he gives examples where taxpayers are just forced to pay big money for stuff I'm sure the taxpayers can't afford. But remember, folks, every time the government steals your money and diverts it to, quote, some noble cause, it shrinks your ability to make choices. You got that? It erodes your freedom. It encroaches on your liberty. This is serious. And what's often hard to understand is the seen versus the unseen. Well,
Frederick Bastiat was the French economist who observed this rule, the seen versus the unseen. And what it is, Sam, all of us see the people at the games buying burgers and hot dogs and fries and, you know, drinks and pop and stuff like that. We see the very, people taking 10 or 20 bucks to park a car, and we see all this economic activity. But what we don't see, Sam, are the larger number of citizens who had their money stolen from them to fund the stadium. What we don't see them not buying things. That's what we don't see. We don't see the customers. The additional, we don't see the fewer customers in a restaurant that never got remodeled. Well, why didn't it get remodeled? Because the owner had to pay higher taxes, some of which were diverted to the stadium, right? And so he didn't have the means to finish the remodel of his restaurant. And because of that, he has fewer customers coming into the restaurant. We don't see that because this new stadium came to town. We simply don't see that. We don't see the families who are unable to pay for swim lessons or dance lessons for their children, or to send their children to private school if they would choose. We don't see people in these humbler situations because they lack the political clout, the newsworthy clout, and so forth, compared to the politicians who get to gloat over their so-called accomplishments.
And then they drive these people into poverty, and then what they do is they declare war on poverty. And then what you get is the failed war on poverty, Daily Caller with the piece.
That's right, Sam. Vicki Alger at the Independent Institute wrote this amazing article that gives us cause for reflection.
And she starts out with an incredible question, lol.
She does. President Lyndon B. Johnson, let's just back up a second, is the one who declared war on poverty in 1964 in a State of the Union address, saying, "Our aim is not only to relieve the symptom of poverty, but to cure it, and above all, to prevent it." And so it's been 55 years, Sam, since the war on poverty was declared, right, 64 to 2019. 55 years, and, you know, I've really never sat back and thought about this war on poverty. How's it gone, right? Well, here's the question she gets to. She talks about this war on poverty declared by Johnson in 64, and regardless of the federal government's totally unconstitutional war on poverty, which is, in my words, stupidly illogical anyway. How do you declare war on a noun like poverty? Anyway, we still have poverty in the U.S. today. In all, some 200 anti-poverty laws and related programs have been enacted during Johnson's administration, and now they cost more than $1 trillion annually and represent the third most expensive government expenditure, exceeding national defense spending.
And we still have massive poverty, though, don't we?
Yes, and then her question is this, but if we want less poverty, do we really need more government?
That's the real question I'm telling you right now. If we want less poverty, do we really need more government, Kurt?
Well, as far as I'm concerned, the main thing we get more of whenever the government says we got a war on drugs or a war on poverty is, you know, more of the thing they declare war on.
Well, that's right. And when you give money for to somebody in a poverty situation, they tend to behave in ways you'll give them that money again. And if that's acting like you're in poverty, they'll continue to act that way. I mean, not everybody, but there are most people will continue to behave in ways that they'll be rewarded by this handout of money. And this is one reason why you don't see religious organizations. The one I'm thinking of is the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. They have a welfare program, but they don't just hand stuff out. I mean, if you're going to participate in the welfare program of that particular church, you work and you earn the money or the handout or the assistance that you receive insofar as you're able. So, you know, the government welfare program is a failed, systemically flawed system, in my opinion.
Yeah, you're right. And Vicki ends her article with a pretty, in my opinion, intelligent kind of idea. After more than five decades of the war on poverty, it's time to admit government is not the solution. In fact, it's a big part of the problem. And I think that's really the highlight takeaway from the article that, hey, you know what? We've got to back government out of some of these things, folks. We've just got to if we want solutions.
Well, you're exactly right, Sam, and I was just amazed that it's $1 trillion annually. That's the cost of these anti-poverty programs. The war on poverty is costing us, folks, $1 trillion annually in this country. So, you know,
and we can't even get rid of the welfare for the rich,
I was just
much less the welfare for the illegals.
doing an email exchange with a state legislator over the weekend, and he's complaining, rightly so. He's complaining that the federal government is, seems like out of control. They're $22.5 trillion in debt, and of course I pointed out that we're going to spend $1 trillion more than we're going to bring in tax revenues. Basically, we spend $4 trillion and we bring in $3 trillion. And one of those trillions, Sam, one of those trillions is spent on the war on poverty. And to me, it's a waste. It's a huge waste because it keeps people in poverty. The way the government runs the welfare program, it discourages the formation of husband-wife relationships, of families. That jeopardizes the familial upbringing of children, which hurts their educational prospects, in many cases dooms them to an ongoing cycle of poverty themselves. So we somehow need to break out of this, Sam. I just thought this is a great article to pause for reflection that to how have we done in the past 55 years with this program, and isn't it time to end the war?
Amen to that, but they steal from you when it comes to these big stadiums. They steal from you when it comes to the welfare system or the, quote, you know, war on poverty. And, you know, really with government, I mean, you know, with people, there's multiple diverse ways to sin. There's many ways to sin, says the scriptures, right? Well, there's many ways the government can steal from you as well. And asset forfeiture is one of them. So we want to talk about this asset forfeiture in South Carolina. It's going on all over the country, though. The number of ways government can steal from you is just out of this world.
It really is, and this is how the law enforcement arm of the government in various states, counties, and communities steal from the citizens. This is a brand new report right out of South Carolina. Now, the reason I brought this to our attention, Sam, is that I don't believe I've seen this detailed, this exhaustive, an expose on the practice of civil asset forfeiture. In all the years I've been doing this, I've heard episodic stories. I've heard of efforts across the nation to amend the laws and to change them, and I've been glad for that. But right here in South Carolina, maybe one of the worst places in the country, asset confiscation, asset forfeiture in South Carolina is alive and well. But the Greenville News of South Carolina has spent, a couple of years studying this in detail, and they're now rolling out in six large installments, six episodes they call them. They're basically exposing this practice of asset forfeiture in South Carolina. It's a comprehensive treatment, and they studied in great detail, Sam, the years 2016 to 2018, I believe that's right. I'd have to find it. Anyway, two specific years in South Carolina, they studied like 4,000 cases of seizures. And
they're doing a tremendous job. It's actually a real reporting for a change, huh, Lowell?
Yeah, real journalism for a change.
Wow, I dig it. We'll come back, talk a little more about that. We got a whole lot on the plate. Sam Curtin, Lowell. CampaignForLiberty.org. This is Liberty Roundtable Live.
Attention Liberty News Radio listeners. Hard-hitting talk radio has never been and never will be supported by the mainstream in America. Hard-hitting talk radio is taking on the mainstream press like never before. News the networks refuse to use is one of the best ways to educate people. We invite all liberty-loving Americans to join with us to restore the principles of our founding fathers and promote God, family, and country in the media and our lives. Please help spread the Liberty message with your generous donation. You can go online at libertynewsradio.com right now and make a donation online. Or call 801-756-9133 and make a donation over the phone. That's libertynewsradio.com and 801-756-9133. Make a donation today.
As the United States boldly stepped forward in the glorious light provided by its new constitution in 1787, the nations of the earth were in awe of the newfound strength and hope of this free land. Today, the nation stands at a crossroads, a divergence from the original intent put forth in the United States Constitution has brought grave threats to our beloved nation. A miracle is needed if the United States is to survive. That miracle is again the pure application of the United States Constitution. I'm Scott Bradley. In my To Preserve the Nation book and lecture series, I bring forth truths that will help raise up a new generation of statesmen like those noble Americans who founded this land. Vigorous application of these principles will invigorate and restore the nation, and we may become again the freest, most prosperous, most respected, and happiest nation on earth. Visit topreservethenation.com to begin that restoration.
When it comes to El Chapo Guzman, I think we ought to have some asset forfeiture and pay for the wall. When it comes to the American people, I think it needs to stop. It's unconstitutional as all get out, ladies and gentlemen. You know what? This, what is it, a newspaper?
Yeah.
Newspaper in North Carolina.
South Carolina.
Or South Carolina, doing a great, great job really talking about this and exposing this for what it is. And, you know, I just hope this goes viral all across the country so people really understand how abusive and hostile and anti-American it really is, Lowell.
Hey, well, is James from South Carolina?
No, James is from Tennessee.
Tennessee, okay. Well, that's pretty close down there, but I just think this type of information is dynamite, and I'm really surprised that they've been able to get it posted out there. The first episode was posted last week. They do two episodes a week, last week, this week, and next. And I think that's the end of their run, but this information is coming out. It's like dynamite, and I would think the law enforcement would have a keen interest in like filing an injunction or something and slapping these guys down, but so far...
Well, I hope we can get all six episodes, then we can put it on some kind of a DVD or some kind of a distribution download or something like that to help promote what they're doing and to highlight the real problem across the country. I mean, this is something phenomenal.
Yeah, it really is, guys. And just to give you some examples of what they found in their two-year studies, of basically they studied civil asset forfeiture in South Carolina from 2014 to 2016, okay? That's the 2 years that they covered. And, for example, here's a case where a man barged into Isaiah Kinlock's apartment, broke a bottle over his head. The North Charleston resident called 911 for help. Well, cops arrived. And they searched the injured man's home, and what did they find? They found an ounce of marijuana, so they took the $1,800 in cash from his apartment and kept it. He was the one calling for help, and they just saw that marijuana and said, hey, we'll take your cash, and we'll claim that this is a drug bust gone bad, and you know, this is the kind of thing they do. Another example, Eamon Cools Lartigue was driving on Interstate 85 in Spartanburg County, and deputies stopped him for speeding. The Atlanta businessman was not criminally charged in the April 2016 incident, but deputies discovered $29,000 in cash in his car and took it. They just took it. Never charged him for a crime, never said he was... Well, I guess speeding, but is that reason to take your $29,000 from your car? I mean, if they see a good-looking diamond on your wife's hand, they stop her for speeding or maybe failing to signal a turn that she took or something and says, oh, heck, that's a nice-looking ring you got there, lady. I think I'll just appropriate that. I hold that for evidence, right? You'll never see that again, that ring. Wow. Anyway,
our biggest problem with this is it enriches government. It promotes the rogue agents in government. Literally gives them wings to do whatever they want. Unlimited black ops money and the whole bit. But the biggest problem with it is it violates due process, ladies and gentlemen. And I get if we're talking about convicted criminals, and I get if we're talking about hardened repeat offender criminals. I get it. At the same time, I say, look, in many of these cases, there's not even the due process of law. There's not any proof that this ill-gotten gain was used in the in process or in aid of or in a beneficiary of a crime or any of these kind of things. And that's really the problem that we have with it. Anyway, incredible expose. We'll keep an eye on this ball, and somebody ought to contact that newspaper and see if we couldn't put it on a get permission to put it on a DVD and distribute it or something, or download and distribute it. But it's called Asset Forfeiture Confiscation in South Carolina, and expose. Really, really good stuff. All right, we've talked about whole lot of more Memorial Day for quite a while on this program, but now there's a whole lot of more commemorative event in Lehi, Utah, to update everybody on. Well,
yes, thank you, Sam. On Friday of this week, that's just 5 days away, if you live near Lehi, Utah, in Utah County, north part of Utah, or can get here by Friday, this is going to be a marvelous event, this Holodomor Remembrance event. Utah Ukrainian community is inviting you to join them to commemorate the victims of the genocide of the forced famine of 1932 and 33 in Ukraine. This is sponsored and hosted by a feisty gal from Ukraine named Marina. The location is 3130 West Maple Loop in Lehi. That location, again, is 3130 West Maple Loop in Lehi, Utah. The date is Friday, February 8th. The doors open at 6:30. The event begins at 7 p.m. All public officials of Utah are invited. The 2018 year marked the 85th anniversary of the Ukrainian Holodomor. By the way, it's officially celebrated on the fourth Saturday of November. So that's basically the 85th anniversary of this just passed. And anyway, the emphasis on this commemorative event is to help us remember so that we don't make this same mistake ever again. Joseph Stalin set out to destroy the Ukrainians because he wanted their land, basically. He wanted to collectivize their land and enrich himself and his country off of their resources. And so he decided to kill them and obliterated at least 5 million, and some people estimate as many as 10 million. Well, this program on Friday night, Sam, is going to include the following: an introduction by the Honorary Consul of Ukraine, Jonathan Friedman, and the presentation of a declaration which was signed by Governor Gary Herbert several months ago in preparation for this November Holodomor celebration. It's going to include the screening of the documentary film Holodomor, Stalin's Secret Genocide. Going to include the presentation of the book entitled Red Apocalypse, and it's going to include the testimony of some live witnesses to Holodomor, which I think is going to be absolutely amazing, and also a question and answer panel, so you can get your questions about this atrocity answered. So, great opportunity, Sam, to acquaint yourself with a little bit of history that simply is not told in our public schools anymore, but ought to be.
Amen to that. And you know what? We want to highlight all wrongs with an understanding they're sad, 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 but we want to make sure they are not repeated. And that's why we want to kind of focus on this. And when you have live witnesses willing to tell about the tale, when you have a breakdown documentary movie that you can watch about this, you can get really caught up to speed in a hurry on how horrific and evil it really was, and how we need to highlight this in history with an idea to make sure it never repeats. And part of the problem is when you don't understand history or when you don't know history, you know, how are you going to watch for it and prevent it from happening again? And that's kind of the whole point here. But it was, we need to understand, it was a secret genocide too, meaning the word didn't get out. You got governments and media around the world willing to help cover this up, even to this day, lol.
That's right. Russia still will refuse today to recognize that this ever happened, and we're trying to put pressure. There's a lot of countries recognizing this day now and this event in history, and I think the Russians will eventually have to succumb and recognize this day in history and this event, but they refused to do so far. And even when Stalin was alive, he paid reporters to report. There was a little food shortage going on in Ukraine, but that's about all. Nothing really to get upset about. nobody's getting hurt over here, and yet in reality, millions were starving, millions were dying in that winter of 1932 and 1933. Sam?
It's tragic, and our prayers are with the survivors, and our prayers are with society at large that we never, ever repeat such atrocities. And it's amazing to me that we hold up the Holocaust for the Jews in World War II as the example. I think we need to hold up all of them as examples. Otherwise, it becomes kind of, why are we suggesting that one Holocaust is less important or less critical or less abhorrent than another? I don't really understand it. Nevertheless, we stand against the pro-death policies, no matter where they come from. All right, greatest of all time, Kurt.
Greatest of all time. We're just talking about this Super Bowl thing.
Yeah, you wanted to go back to that, sir.
Well, the problem is, Sam, I thought you'd want to know there's a bunch of folks that are saying it was pretty racist, and the whole... you know, I guess the whole Boston area, they say, is held by a bunch of racist kind of leaders who run those teams. They point out that Kevin McHale, the former Boston Celtics great, and Larry Bird, you know, a couple of white guys, were great, but the problem is, you know, because they're white, they were racist. And then they talk about the owner of the Patriots, Mr. Kraft, being a Trump supporter, then of course, since he's a white guy, he's a racist as well. And I guess, of course, you know that Tom Brady and then the Super Bowl MVP, he's a receiver for Brady. I forget his name right now, but then of course he's white as well. And so then you got just racial overtones, they say.
Yeah, and they say greatest of all time, Tom Brady, 6th Super Bowl win, infuriates the Donald Trump haters, lol.
Why is that?
Because they're all a bunch of white racists, buddy.
Oh,
that's right.
I mean, didn't the Super Bowl national anthem singer set the stage for us all to work together? I thought that was the whole point. What happened?
Well, you know, Gladys, that was Gladys Knight.
She did great work. Apparently, she did the greatest ever of, you know, that. But they don't want to highlight that because there was nobody hating it or whatever.
That's right. Well, they did. Black. They did try to hate it, Kurt. You want to know what their criticism was?
What was that?
She sang the last line more than once and went over time by 10 seconds, buddy.
Yeah.
Ooh,
that's their biggest complaint they can come up with. I kid you not. I mean, these people are off the rails. It was phenomenal. Everybody loved it. And her point was to bring everybody together and set aside our differences for once. And I commend her for it, by the way. Lol.
Yeah, I do too. I'm quite a big admirer of hers and her talent, her voice, and her ability to bring people together are kind of legendary, Sam. And she did that. I mean, everybody... I mean, my wife and I my wife was standing in the living room during the performance. I was listening to it from the other room here, but wow, she was standing up. I mean, it brought people together, Sam.
Amen. And I want to see more of it is the reason that I highlight it. And I really would like to see if we can't just set aside our differences and say, hey, there is good in America. We're all about the good together. And I believe that that's what most Americans actually think. You know that?
No, I think so, too. I think the average American loves country and stands together and is unified. I think it's maybe 1% or 2% of the country that wants this divisive barking to go on in the news and in politics and, you know, everywhere, I guess. I don't know, Sam.
Well, thanks for being along with us. Thanks for all the freedom loving you do, Lowell, and the hard work that you put in, and you and your family. We're grateful for you guys, and we're grateful for the example that you set and the hard work. And anyway, spread the word. CampaignForLiberty.org, ladies and gentlemen. Thanks, Lowell.
You're welcome.
All right, quick pause. Scott Bradley with a second hour. Liberty Roundtable Live. I'm Sam, and Kurt's with me on the road. And for me, Kurt, and Lowell, and many others, we declare we the people, along with the grace of the Almighty, we can and will restore America. The only question left is, will you help? This nation shall endure. God save the Republic of the United States of America.